Welcome back to another episode. My name is Kirsty Pike.
And I'm Christine Diaz, and we are the hosts of the original podcast, She Comes With Baggage.
This is the last episode of season one. I can't believe it's already here, but today we're going to be talking all about how to protect your peace.
And this is so important because this kind of sums up everything about this podcast.
That's true. All the baggage.
Yeah. So we can't wait to unwrap the baggage with you.
Oh, back at another episode now.
And the last episode, actually.
This is wild. It's already a whole season in. I think when we were planning to do this podcast, we were, you know, just thinking about episode one, what would we do, what would we come up with. And it's just wild to think that we're already on episode 10. This is wild. It makes me excited, though, about what's to come. What are we going to do next kind of thing, you know? But we wanted to end this season one on, I guess, a more serious note, because, you know, one of the biggest questions that we get asked all the time is about, you know, our mental health, like protecting our peace and ways that we can practice staying healthy, especially with this fast paced life we live, that we all live, right?
Mm-hmm. And especially with social media and like having a job on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's why we thought today would be a great time to kind of end it on an inspiring podcast episode where we're talking all about protecting our peace and mental health. Why do you think this is such an important episode for you personally?
When we think of our experiences and our quote unquote baggage, this is really what it's all about. It's right. Those experiences that you went through. It's those insecurities, those vulnerabilities that we all have and how that plays into our lives. And especially with what we do, we are public and putting ourselves out there all day, every day. Mm-hmm. It is so important that we have some kind of practice in mind when it comes to our mental health, to, you know, staying focused, to not letting the little things get to you.
Yeah. I think ultimately, if we didn't have boundaries as individuals, as a couple, as a business, if we didn't have very clear boundaries with each other, it could probably lead to burnout. It could be
really messy.
Toxicity. You're my priority. Our relationship is our priority. And if everything else has to come to a stop because it's prioritizing us, that's what I'm going to do. But I'm like, how can we continue building our lives together as a couple, but also just having fun with it too? And I think both of us have such a passion for traveling and meeting people and trying to help and leave this world better than we found it, right? And I think that's our biggest goal. But at the end of the day, you got to set boundaries and make sure that
you're good.
Yeah, we're good first and foremost. If we're not good, then nothing else is going to translate the way we want it to, right?
It always happens that way too. Like there are times when it's not rainbows and butterflies. And
I mean, it is rainbows.
I mean, it's definitely a lot of rainbows, a lot of rainbows. But there are times when Kirstie and I bicker and we have to do a shoot or something for work. And it definitely reflects in the content that we produce.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all human. And I know us being online, people probably don't really imagine that as being the case, but we are definitely human. We have our emotions and our insecurities, like you said, just like everyone else. So we're hoping that at least by sharing what we do to maintain our boundaries, that maybe it will be relatable to somebody out there who is listening. We're still in the beginning stages of 2024 right now, so we want to make sure that we're leading this rest of this year on a good note, on a strong mindset. And yeah, I think it'll be good. I know you had mentioned before that you have five practices. Do you want to kind of go through one at a time if you want to start with number one?
So number one, paying attention to your triggers. I think this is honestly probably one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, this is why it's our number one. When we first started dating, I think we mentioned before that I'm an Aries, Christine's a Scorpio. Like we have a lot of opposites, but I'm going to say we have a lot of things in common, but we also have some things that are opposite. And I feel like all the things say that we clash. If we don't have very, very strong communication with one another, we clash. And when we clash hard, you know, because we're both hot-headed in our own ways.
Our triggers are insecurities that we don't like to disclose all the time and we don't like to talk about. But if you're with someone, especially just being in a relationship, like this is something you have to discuss, because something I could say and I could take lightly could affect you and vice versa. And we'll never know that if we don't talk about it.
I have a history of that has led me to have a strong insecurity of like abandonment. Like my biggest fear is abandonment. I think it comes from a parental standpoint. You know, like I barely knew my birth father. He, you know, left when I was like 2 years old. And then I was adopted by my mom's second husband when I was like two or three. He's amazing, don't get me wrong, but there's that initial abandonment. And then there were many different patterns of abandonment throughout my life in multiple different ways, which I'm sure we'll have a whole episode on another time. But I think that was my biggest thing. And a lot of times for me to deal with not only just abandonment, but other triggers and insecurities of my own, or like just past traumas or whatever it might be, I would use alcohol as like a way to escape that and to kind of numb those feelings or those. I don't like to, I want to be a happy person. I want to be ultimately. So I think for me, I was drinking a lot to try to not be anxious or fearful or sad. And so I would kind of use alcohol to make myself that person that I wanted to be, which was the happy person that everyone saw, the party person, the happy-go-lucky. But me drinking for multiple years, you know, I think
it was kind of like a disguise that you were wearing.
Exactly.
And it also became like a societal norm too.
Yeah.
Like drinking culture is such a thing in almost every, or not every country, but it's definitely an American norm.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you go anywhere, you're going to see, most likely you're going to see an advertisement for alcohol. You're going to be able to see an advertisement for partying or drinking. Not to say it's necessarily a terrible thing, but for me, you know, I was also a bartender in New York City. I was a bartender in Sydney, in San Francisco. I was, you know, in hospitality for many years. So I had access to alcohol too. So not only was that kind of my escape route, but I also had access to it all day, every single day. And I think that eventually led to a lot of misuse with alcohol. And basically, long story short, I think for me, that became and transpired into a trigger against you. But I realized that eventually our triggers triggered each other.
Yeah.
So it was this cycle of triggering each other. And basically when Christine would be upset with me about drinking, I would get this immediate fear that she's going to abandon me, which made me freak out and get more worried, which made me want to drink more because I wanted to not feel worried or anxious. So it was just like this vicious cycle. Yeah.
I think for me, there's a few things that trigger me, I guess. Like body dysmorphia was a huge thing. Just being raised in the household that I was. Like, I love my mom, but I think she was also raised to be that way too. And just being an immigrant, she has this image of what someone needs to look like and how someone should look. And so I think that definitely left an impression on me. Being online, you know, showing our bodies all the time is something that used to trigger me.
Like, yeah.
We literally take photos all day, every day. We're always staring at our bodies.
Yeah. Well, even on before social media, though, I mean, you were still on social media, but even before social media, we all know that when we first started meeting, I was drinking a lot. So we were drinking a lot, right? And that also triggered body dysmorphia because obviously you're packing in the calories, you're packing in the drinking calories.
You're just naturally bloated all the time.
You go home and you order $100 worth of like fast food and you're eating mozzarella sticks. And Christine's, that's her.
That's my go-to, mozzarella sticks.
Mozzarella sticks, mozzie sticks. And yeah, so eventually that kind of triggered you, right?
Yeah.
Because then you were not eating well, you were not sleeping very well, your body started to change. And which made you mentally feel not
happy. And that's such a huge thing for me is I need to feel good. I need to feel active. I need to feel like I'm doing something. And because we were going out so much and just kind of partying and living this like New Yorker lifestyle, it wasn't it anymore. It wasn't serving me anymore.
Right.
And I wasn't feeling good.
Which was kind of crazy too, because like for me, my visual standpoint is I couldn't see anything that you were seeing in yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I saw you as like, and still see you always as the most beautiful person, right? I truly think you're absolutely stunning in at all points of life. And I think the hardest thing was seeing you not see that. I think the hardest thing for me was like, I don't understand why you don't see how beautiful you are. And I think it was very hard for me to understand body dysmorphia. So I bought books. I started doing research, was reading all about it online to see what I could do, because I realized even me trying to comfort you and saying, no, you're perfect. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. That was not what you needed, right? Like, that was only triggering you more, which when you pulled away because I was making you feel uncomfortable and because you couldn't see that, right? But me telling you something that you couldn't see doesn't help. And when you would pull away, I'd get worried you're pulling away because of me, which was the abandonment thing. So it was just like we were really triggering each other without even meaning to. It wasn't because it was coming out of a place of not loving each other. It was just like not knowing how to love each other the right way, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we had to learn along the years too. But, you know, I think not only that, but another way that we protect our peace is that we had to remove ourselves from certain environments to better our individual selves and to put ourselves first and start taking care of ourselves better. When in that regard, for me, I had to stop working at the bar. I had, because I was so, it was so accessible for me to keep drinking, but I knew that if I keep drinking, I was just going to keep hitting rock bottom and then ultimately lose you. Because I think at this point I recognized I had a problem with it. So I had to remove myself from the bar. I had to remove myself from our party friends for a while. I had to remove myself from anything alcohol related. And, you know, this was 2.5 years ago now. So I'm 2.5 years sober and it was the best decision I made. But at that time, it was one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make because
I was surrounded by it.
Yeah.
Like, we actually went to an all-inclusive with my family for a wedding right after it. And you were like the groomswoman where they were expecting you to take shots and like rally. And that is honestly my family culture too, is to kind of drink and have a good time. And that the fact that that defines a good time is drinking is a problem in itself. Yeah. And it's not like my family's fault. It's what we've just developed as a norm.
And to be fair, I mean, when I was out and having a good time, no one would ever know that I was actually battling with a lot of stuff internally, right? No one would have a clue that I was actually very not okay on the inside, because exterior, I was like, party, shots, like, let's have a good time. Let's party all the way till 6 a.m, 6 days in a row. Let's go, everyone. I was like the hype man, right? Like the hype woman. I would always get everyone else ready to go and drink. But I also realized in myself that I would get other people to drink. So that way I had an excuse to keep drinking, right? So I'd be like, you take a shot, because that means I can take more, right? And so I just realized that I had to remove myself from those environments. I would never be able to find an escape from it, right? I had to completely remove myself. And I know that some people say, oh, it's about balance. It's about, you know, taking it one step. Just have one drink a day. And I was like, that's not how it works sometimes. You know, I think for me, it was definitely something that I became a lifestyle I became addicted to. And I had to just, I personally had to cut it out. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not for everyone, but removing myself from as much of that environment that I could has helped me so much with protecting my peace.
But it also like helped you grow too. And I don't think it ever bothered you that I drink.
No.
It never bothered you once, because it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's about you.
Yeah, because you still have a couple drinks here and there, and that it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me being out. Now I'm in a place where I'm very confident with my decision, and I can be in public. I can be around people who are drinking. That's fine. And I also realize that when people ask me, they do. The people ask really ignorant questions sometimes. Like, I think this guy said once, we had just gone on a dinner date with a group of people.
It was a business dinner.
And afterwards, you know, I was ordering mocktails, which is great because they look like cocktails, but it's just no alcohol in it. And so I was drinking mocktails. It was no big deal. And afterwards, everyone was drinking, having a good time. And he found out that I was sober. And he was like, no, I saw you drinking at dinner. I was like, no, it was mocktails. He goes, oh, I could never go to dinner with someone who's sober. Like,
I could never go out on a dinner when the other person's not drinking.
And I was like, yeah, but you just did. Like, I was not drinking the whole time. He said that to my face. And then he looked at you and he was like, don't you want her to drink again?
And I was like, I really don't care.
Yeah, right.
Like, as long as you are happy and you're, you know, safe and prioritizing your health, I don't care what you do.
Right. And I think you've always been so supportive of me in that decision, too. But I also realize that when people say things like that, like ignorant, maybe even borderline disrespectful things, it's also coming from a place of projection that maybe they're struggling with something, or, you know. And I also realize, too, that anyone who's ever had a negative comment to me about my sobriety journey, they weren't there through the times where I was really struggling, right? Those aren't the people that they weren't there for me during, you know, going to the hospital or dealing with panic attacks or, you know, all these different moments. Those weren't the people who were there experiencing those moments. Those people who say those comments aren't the ones that were there for me during those moments. Those aren't the close people to me, my support system and my support group, like you or my sisters or my friends, right? So I kind of have to let it go because those people don't truly know me yet. And I think once they do, they'll realize I'm just the same person as I was, just I'm sober. But what about you? Do you find that people ever make comments that trigger you or make you feel...
I think body dysmorphia is something that will never completely go away. Mm. Like, I've definitely done the work. Like, there was a point in time where I was hitting rock bottom with you, and it was about body dysmorphia, just because I wasn't happy with myself. I wasn't, like, I felt like everything I was doing was just not working, and even when I was dieting or working out, like, nothing was working, and then I felt like I had all of these pressures that were out of my control. I think specifically this was really hard after COVID because my family went through hell. Mm-hmm. Like, my dad was in a coma for, I don't know, 42 days.
Mm-hmm. With COVID.
This was
at early March 2020. So it was before there were vaccines, before there were, the NBA had shut down. It was like very, very early on. So we didn't really even know what was happening yet.
Mm-hmm. So I was like kind of dealing with my dad and his struggle of dealing with COVID and how it had affected him. And then it was like my grandma passed because of COVID. And then this was also like right after we came back from the most amazing trip of our entire lives in 2019. So we went from like this extreme high to this lowest of lows. Like, you literally cannot travel. That mm-hmm. is literally what you can't do. And that was the one thing that like was our vice.
We had gone home after our trip in Southeast Asia, where we were there for 10 months. We had went home to see the family, and we surprised her family. It was amazing. And we only planned to stay for like 2 or 3 months, save up a little money, and then we were going to do another trip. And we were going to plan a whole other trip. We bought flights, I think. We bought
insurance.
Health insurance, all the things. Mm-hmm. And then 3 days later, I think the world shut down, and no one could fly, no one could travel. And we were like, what is happening? And then I think that same week is when
my dad got really sick. And my dad is like one of the most healthiest people I know.
The man wakes up at 3 a.m. every single day to go work out because he just loves it.
He just loves working out. Yeah. And he can outrun me. He's always healthy, and he hadn't had a problem. And so like COVID affecting him the way it did, where he was in a coma and literally on a ventilator for months.
Yeah.
Like, it was insane.
So we basically came back from that trip of just full freedom, independence, no responsibility, no worries, no nothing. It was amazing. And then we came back, and then the world had stopped. There was no more traveling to indefinitely is what we knew of it. Your dad was sick. Your grandmother had passed, and she was someone who practically raised you, right?
She was like a second mother at that point.
And it was just like our hearts just felt so ripped to pieces over and over and over again, because we were just like, what's going to happen next? Who is it going to take next? Because it was just felt so helpless in that moment. So I feel like we went from having all of the freedom and the living in the present to living in the present, but not the same way. It was so, so scary at that time. And I think that was a moment that triggered both of us, and my battle with alcohol, your battle with body dysmorphia. Our mental health was not in a good place at that time, because we were holding on so hard to be tough and strong for your mom and for your family. But relationship wise, it was very difficult, I think. Right.
Yeah. Because I feel like we couldn't like be there for each other either.
Yeah. There was no mental capacity for us to be there for each other as a couple. It was just as individuals. Like, I'm here for you and I'm your support system, but there was no like romantic moments, no date nights, no nothing, because that's not what you can think about in that moment, right? Like,
it's almost like I would feel guilty if I did anything that was even remotely happy, knowing that my dad and my mom were struggling.
Right. And this is a moment, we were living with them. We were taking care of your mom while he was in the hospital. And then when he got out of the hospital, we were, you know, we had to teach him how to walk again. We were feeding him water because he couldn't feed, like he had lost so much weight. So I think, you know, we had to rebuild everything from scratch again. Not only that, but we had come back from Southeast Asia where we didn't have an apartment. We didn't have furniture. We didn't have anything. So we were living with your parents because we didn't have anywhere else to go. We thought we were going to travel again, right? Mm-hmm. So then it was like, all right, now it's been a year and a half. What do we do? Like, we need to move out. We need to, like, start to rebuild our relationship.
Yeah. So then I think at the end of 2020, when things were slightly starting to come back, like not fully by any means, but I think that's when we were both like, all right, a change needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to do something for ourselves. And that's when we moved to Colorado.
Right. And that's where another, you know, one of the top five things for us in protecting your peace is making changes where you can. Mm-hmm. And I think in that moment we had to make a change. And this kind of ties into environment. Like, we had to make an environmental change. It was so hard for us to leave your parents, but I think we had just gone so attached to, like, taking care of them. But we also knew for our own health and our relationship's health, we had to, like, make a change where we could. And so we got an apartment again. We moved to Denver to be with friends. And it was amazing. Like, we had a really amazing time there. But
there were still those lingering things that we never took care of, like the abandonment issues, alcohol issues, and then the body dysmorphia. And I feel like it was still kind of lingering in the back. And mm-hmm. so I think to some point or some degree, like when we would get triggered by it, we wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
And so it would just boil up and it'd be terrible.
I think too, neither of us communicated clearly at that time because we had both gone through so much with through COVID and through all the things that we had gone through family wise. We didn't want to communicate. It almost, like you said, it felt selfish to talk about us because there's so many other people that needed us right now. But I realized that became such a habit that we stopped communicating about us and what our individual needs were, that exactly what you said, it started to boil over. And then that just eventually triggered us into a really bad spiral. And we're going to definitely go into this at another point, but we ended up having to split up for a couple months, right? Like, it was
kind
crazy.
Of work on ourselves and figure out what are the things that are going to make us feel better as individuals.
Yeah.
Because if we're not good individually, then we're definitely not going to work together.
No, absolutely. And at this time, I was still drinking heavily, very heavily. And mm-hmm. you were still battling with your body dysmorphia at probably at the heightened of it as it's ever been, right? Mm-hmm. So it was just like all these things mix into one. So I think, yeah, we had to make a change. I personally had to make a change of, I decided, like, look, it's either going to be me continuing to drink and foster this lifestyle of numbing myself, but that's going to come at the cost of losing Christine. And I was like, that's just not going to happen. Like, I'm not going to let that happen. So I was like, I have to make a change. So I ended up quitting drinking and finding new hobbies, started working out a lot more. And I think also both of us finding like a fitness journey in a way, like us getting on a routine. We started making changes in our diet and our workout routines. Like, we started doing a lot more that way.
This brings me to my third point, is making time for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that is ultimately what kind of helped me realize body dysmorphia was a thing. And what I see is not what everyone else sees. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, because it's not even what about everyone else thinks, but it was about what I think or what I see. And mm-hmm. so that was the problem, mm-hmm. is that this is what I'm seeing and I don't know how to fix it and I don't know how to change it. But I mean, working on myself and taking that time away from each other, we were able to go to therapy, think of things that, you know, are going to fix the problem. So like for me personally, it was just realizing that there wasn't anything wrong, mm-hmm. or like, you know, my body fluctuates like everyone else's. And it's kind of a sensitive topic. And I think it's a sensitive topic for everyone. Everyone kind of deals with this. And it just sucks because it is all over social media that you're supposed to look a certain way or feel a certain way. And that's not always the truth. Like, everyone is different, mm-hmm. and we all come in beautiful shapes and sizes and colors.
Yeah. I think too, social media is like, especially Instagram, is this place that's supposed to be like a beautiful aesthetic, the picture perfect life, right? Which we all know is not always the case, right? You know, there's a lot of heavily edits that go behind those, you know, beautiful Instagram posts. So I don't know. I think it's good for you to have realized that you had to like make time for yourself. And I think also that was something we had to do too, because we had given all of our time to everyone else, right? Whenever it wasn't your parents, it was then we were like hanging out with friends all the time, and we were hosting all the time, which was still great. Like, I love hosting, don't get me wrong, but we were doing it every night of the week, throwing parties and hosting. And so we were giving our time to everyone else, but it was like good for us to finally make time for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think also with the social media thing too, and this is something we'll end up getting into as the other point, is, you know, you had, it wasn't just Instagram, right? There's years and years of...
Oh, there's so much history in...
Of things you in see.
Body dysmorphia and, you know, just anorexia being a trend.
Right.
Like, that being a thing. Like, that was something that was...
I mean, you grew up on, what's the show called?
America's Next Top Model.
I watched season one again recently.
It is so crazy how that was even, like, I don't know how it made it to the networks and was like, this is good TV.
Yeah.
Which is sad because I believed, I was eating it up. I was like, yes, I want to be on there.
They were making comments about the way people looked. They were calling them, you know, like that they were not in shape and everything. And these people were not... Like, they literally look like they hadn't been able to eat and actually enjoy a nutritionist. I don't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it was very toxic. It was super toxic.
And that's also the field I wanted to go into. Like, I loved high fashion. I loved luxury fashion. And so...
I mean, you wanted to go to FIT, didn't you?
I did want to go to FIT. And actually, that's the reason why I didn't go, is because I kind of knew in my head that it would have been not a good place for me to be mentally. And I needed to go somewhere a little more generic, just so I can kind of pick and choose where my career path would go. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know if that'll ever go away. Mm-hmm. There are still days where I wake up and I'm like, ugh, I really do not feel my best.
Yeah.
But I do feel like more days than not, I don't have that mindset anymore. Mm-hmm. And I 100% think working out makes me feel better.
Yeah.
It like... For my mental health, for my physical health, I truly feel like I'm doing something. Like, I feel like I'm being proactive and like allowing it at least to be a little bit in my control.
Yeah. I think I wasn't always like the biggest gym person. I was like pulling teeth for me to get on a treadmill. I would always be like, Christine would be on like full blast doing the Stairmaster, and I would be counting down to 100 calories, and I'm like 3, 2, 1, and then emergency stop. Like, I don't want to be here. But I also knew that your mental health was really a reflection of like how well you were taking care of yourself. And one of the best things that you do is when you're working out, you feel like you're releasing all that pent up anxiety. And it was less about, I think what I've noticed, and I don't know if this is something that you can attest to, that your love for the gym is more about your mental health almost than it is your physical health, which is totally ironic since you go to the gym for a physical benefit. But I feel like when you're not going to the gym, you mentally feel it.
Well, I think it's like a point in time where I'm truly prioritizing me. Like, yeah. I physically cannot run and post or be on social media or email or work, essentially. Mm-hmm. I physically can't do it. So yeah. I feel like it's the one time where I'm like, this is my me time. This is the time where, you know, the thoughts that are running through my head are just selfishly about me. Like, mm-hmm. it's about what I want to do. What are the goals I want to reach? I can kind of shut the world off a little bit, or I can, and some days I just zone out.
Yeah.
And I just listen to music and I don't feel bad for listening to music or doing nothing because I'm at the gym.
Yeah. I used to like, we'd be on the treadmill next to each other, and I used to like text you ideas or thoughts that I have, because I just have ADHD. I don't know. It never shuts off in there. It's just like, oh, I have an idea. Oh, it's squirrel. Like,
and Kirstie would be like, did you see that? And I'm like, no, I'm like heavily invested into Love Island right now. Yeah. So like, it's not happening.
First of all, I don't know why you watch like trash TV. Well, not even trash TV. I love how you watch like reality TV while you're working out, even though that's super toxic. It's like you like watch toxic
shows. It's my
shows.
Way of zoning out. Like, that's my way of zoning out. I love that 30 minutes have gone by, I just burned like 600 calories and I just watched this episode. Like, it's like so many wins in that one.
Right. So like, that's period. The point whenever I would ask you a question, you would literally not even look at me. You would like press I'd the be, noise
if anything, I'm like putting the volume louder, like turning it on my AirPod Max. I'm like,
you're literally you do the button where it's like noise cancellation, Kirstie cancellation. In that moment, I'm like, oh, okay, fine. Let me just live in this thought for a minute and I'll write it down. And then as soon as I go on our walk back home from the gym, I'm like, babe, these are all the things I was thinking in that 35 minute period that we haven't talked to each other. You're like, oh my God. But yeah, I think we really had to learn what works best for each other. And I think that we've compromised and found support in that, right? Like, I don't think I would have gotten as far as I did without your support in my sobriety journey. Like, I know at first you were like, why? You know, there's no point. But over time, I think you've realized that this is my gym. You know what I mean? This is what the gym does to you, is like, it makes me mentally feel better. And it makes me actually feel, I don't know, prepared enough to chase my dreams and chase the things that make me happy.
Yeah.
And doing that with you. And I truly do not think that we'd be where we are right now, coming from like on my side of things, if I was still doing the same habits that I had before.
Yeah.
So
I mean, yeah, same. And even when we travel, it is so hard to get on a routine.
Oh my gosh, but so hard.
I think that it's something that we try to prioritize as much as possible. Like, if we're not actively going to the gym, we're actively doing something.
Yeah. I mean, when we are traveling, we walk as much as possible. We're always walking. We're always, I mean, we don't really, it's not like we're like counting calories or anything. We definitely eat when we travel.
Oh my
like
God. We indulge. I'm a foodie.
Yeah.
Remember, I'm the lesbian Anthony Bourdain.
That's right.
That is happening. So
you're like, manifest it, speak it to existence.
Like, eating is definitely something that we do.
No, absolutely. We're not holding ourselves back. Right. So, but we also know to maintain everything. Like, we need to walk, we need to get active. Like, we're not gonna just, you know, sit in the hotel room. So we're always walking and doing something active.
It's also the best way to see cities,
hiking and seeing a city, traveling, walking the block. So I think it's all like a lot about both of us finding a very nice compromise. But it's funny because I think now, instead of us both being addicted to our own, like, I don't know, sadness to say, we have now fully immersed ourselves in working. And I'm like, now we have to tune it back on, like, we've had to really put a lot of boundaries around working, because we're both such ambitious people that we could very easily get addicted to what's the next thing. What are we doing next? What are we doing next? But it becomes almost like, I don't know, infatuous in a way. Like, we become so obsessed with like our job that we really need to like schedule time to put like no
boundaries in place.
No social media, no laptops, no emails. Do not disturb.
Do not disturb is on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it will be tomorrow after 12 p.m.
Yeah, after 12 p.m. We're like, tomorrow, we are not, no emails, no people, no nothing. But we do. We have to set those days for each other because it's important. You know, we've talked about this before. Our love languages is physical touch and quality time. And people are probably like, oh my God, you get that all the time. Absolutely. We're with each other almost 24/7. But that doesn't always necessarily translate to quality time, right? I mean, we are with each other and
we're
working
also
on things,
hustling and hard, working and thinking of new projects and emailing and talking to people and connecting and networking and taking conferences and traveling and being on a plane. And like, there's just so many things where it's like, that's not quality time.
What's my idea of quality time is sitting on the couch. We've like made dinner together, we sit on the couch and we just watch like 6 hours of TV in our like
cozies,
in our cozies
looking like gremlins.
You know, quality time was definitely something that we had to, I hate the term schedule because that almost feels like
it takes the romance
out of it, but it's okay sometimes to have to schedule time into your schedule. Like, we all have calendars, and I'm sure when we all look at our calendar for the
month,
it's
part of adulting, honestly, at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have a date night scheduled tomorrow night. I'm so excited for it. It's also something that we can build anticipation around, and knowing that we have this quality time coming up.
There's nothing wrong with a schedule. I think being bounded by the schedule, like if things don't go wrong, because everything, you know, anything could come up, I think that's when it's a problem. But making a schedule for yourself and making sure that you have time for yourself is just part of being a grown up. Like, no, it's just part of putting you first versus others.
No, absolutely. And speaking of others, that brings us to point number five, pretty much.
So letting go of negative people and negative environments even is so important, because I think as you get older, it's kind of scary to feel like you're letting go of people, or that, you know, people no longer serve you. Mm-hmm. But I think both of us have experienced that over the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. There are people in our lives who are no longer being positive reflections or making a positive impact in our life. And it was starting to mess with us mentally. Yeah.
And these are people who are
super close,
very, very close to us, family and friends. It's just like
family and friend friends that I've known for years and years. And almost to an extent, it felt like best friend breakups are even worse than relationship breakups, because you kind of grew up with them. Over time that has passed, I feel like not happier, but I do feel like I've made space for people that do make a positive impact in my life now.
Yeah. Mine, I think, came from separating myself from family. That was very, very toxic for me. People who only really triggered me in a very intense, bad way. When you talk about toxic people in your life, and when you're referring to family, people always say, well, it's your blood. Family is blood. You can't remove yourself from them, you know? And I'm like, no, absolutely you can. Just because you're blood related to someone doesn't mean that they prioritize your mental and overall health, right? Sometimes chosen family, and mm-hmm. those are people that I've chosen to surround myself with, are my family, right? Mm-hmm. People who will unconditionally have my back and unconditionally want to support me and make sure that I'm okay. And they're not going to gaslight me, and they're not going to put me in negative environments, and they're not going to put my safety at risk. And I think ultimately I had to separate myself from people who weren't doing those things. And to be honest with you, like, this is family, right? Like, these are people
who you would think that, but I think that's why the word family is really what it is, your definition of it. And it's the people who you choose that, you know, to your point, like, support you, unconditionally love you, and mm-hmm. want the best for you.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't plan to do it around the same time. I think just situationally things happened where the
stars aligned, where we were having breakups at the same time.
right. Exactly. And we basically looked at each other and we were like, this is the moment. Like, this is where we need to remove ourselves from people who are no longer bringing a positive impact in our life. And it comes back to all the things that we talked about, which is like removing yourself from toxic environments, removing yourself, you know, making a change where you can.
Paying attention to those triggers and like what happened even within those people that made you feel triggered by them, you know, making sure that you're prioritizing yourself. Yeah. And if that means letting go, then that's what it means right now.
Right.
And it's not saying like letting go forever.
Yeah.
Because first off, the word forever should just be removed from everyone's vocabulary. Yeah. Because it is so hard to live around that statement.
Right. Well, but the idea of forever, not to be like dramatic, but it's not real. Like, we only have today, right? Yeah. We only really have right now. So like prioritizing your own health and mental health is right now should be a priority, and that needs to come from
making those changes in life.
Yeah,
doing the things you need to do to put you first.
I think, you know, at first all of these things were so hard to go through each of these steps, but I think now that it's been a couple of years, I mean, look at our relationship now. I feel like we're at the best place we've ever been in. Like, if I could knock on glass, I would. I'm going to knock on glass for me. Thank you. But no, we're at the best place we ever have. But I truly think it's because we've been protecting our peace and doing whatever means necessary, no matter how hard it is, to make sure that we're
constantly communicating. And of course, there are days where we feel off. Like,
And when Mercury is in retrograde, like, that needs to stop already.
She's been there for a hot minute. She needs to go.
I swear, every time we bicker, we're like, retrograde,
Yeah.
It's the retrograde. It's, I don't even know if that's retrograde. A thing. I don't even know. I don't think it's real. I feel like we're probably just saying that it's in retrograde and it's not, but that makes me feel
better. No, I think
better.
It's always in retrograde, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I don't even know what it means, but I just know it means that I'm like irritable. So there you go. Yeah. At the end of the day, look, we're all human. We all go through these things and we all go through these insecurities and these, you know, these fears, right? But it's like learning how can we ultimately take that baggage mm-hmm. and turn it towards something positive and, you know, transfer those feelings into something that's motivational or inspirational for you. And, you know, I think that it's okay sometimes to be selfish. I think the word selfish has a negative connotation when it doesn't need to be. Being like, selfish is probably the best thing that you can do
it's
sometimes.
It's literally thinking of yourself, which right. no one else is going to think about you like
right.
you.
As long as you're not doing it that, you know, at the expense of others, I feel like being selfish is sometimes a good thing. It's going to allow you to grow. It's going to allow you to truly take care of your mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health. You can finally put yourself first because, you know, I think that's the best way that you can then in turn put others first and take care of other people is when you're truly taking care of yourself. Like cliche as it is, it's true.
Being that positive light for the people around you is ultimately a good thing. And then that's a selfless thing.
Right.
So just taking care of yourself. I love being around you because you're so positive and optimistic and you make me feel like everything's going to be okay. And like that is somebody you want around you. You don't want the negative energy or you don't want to have somebody around you where you feel like you can't share your goals or your things or be happy about and
celebrate your wins.
And I feel like you always remind me to celebrate my wins.
We have like a little dance that we do when we when we celebrate little wins. Doesn't matter where it is, like we always look at each other and we're like, this, do it with me.
No, that's embarrassing.
No, I can't do it by myself. Come on, we gotta do it. Do the pew pews. Pew 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 pew. So like we're in the house and we're like, oh, look at the email we just got. We're like, pew, 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 pew. We both do it and we like have this like little dance. She'll never do it in public. It's fine. No, it's okay. Sorry. It's our own little moment.
Maybe that's season two.
Yeah. Whenever we start season two, you have to do it.
Okay, fine.
That's how the opening line. You pew, pew. Okay, you're gonna do it. All right.
Pinky promise.
I mean. Honestly, like, that's the small things, though. It's really the small things that it's like those little pew-pews that we do, or we every day when we somehow see that it's 11:11. Oh my God, we're so cliche. We literally stop what we're doing. We run over to each other and we hold hands and we close our eyes and make a little wish. We do it every single time. Now it's become a routine that when it's 11:12, we're like, oh, damn it, we missed it.
Yeah, we can't manifest as hard as we want to manifest it.
Or we'll look at each other and be like, babe, I don't want to tell you this out loud, but 3 minutes until 11:11. So make sure you remember in 3 minutes to check again. But I think that is, again, just taking that moment out of your busy, busy day, the day that you're, you know, hustling and you have 1,000 things going on and your calendar is all over the place. But that's our one little moment at 11:11 every day that we look at each other, we hold hands and we like reground ourselves, recenter ourselves, and we realize like what is the bigger meaning for all the things that we're doing, right? Why are we mm-hmm. putting ourselves and are prioritizing our health first? Like what is our bigger goals? What are our bigger dreams? So those are the little things that we do. And like we have our vision board. Oh my God, we're such a lesbian couple. We're so gay. But I think like we have a little vision board that we like right on, and you should tell them about our milestone
book. We also
book.
Have a milestone book. So it's not just a vision board, but every time we're accomplishing these goals, we kind of strip it down from our vision board, write the date of when it happened.
We live in such a fast-paced life that sometimes we always forget. Focused on mm-hmm. these big, big, big dreams that you have, but you don't even realize that all the small dreams, all the small goals that you make
That
got you to that big dream, right? So we have this thing where we take the visions that come true and we put them in our milestone book and we write the date on it. And in our milestone book, now we go back over the last 2 or 3 years. I think we did it like 2 or 3 years ago. And there are all these milestones that we've hit over the years.
And it's just crazy to think like we've worked so hard to get to mm-hmm. all of those milestones. And if we didn't write them down, we probably wouldn't have recognized how far we've come and how much we've grown.
I mean, just thinking like when you go back 2 years ago, you look at the milestones that you wrote down on your vision board 2 years ago. Let's say, you know, hit my first brand deal 2 or 3 years ago. And then now we have an entire business built on brand deals and monetizing our business and all these things, right? Like, back then, that was our dream, right?
And our dream was to travel.
Yeah.
And now we are doing that.
Yeah. And so it's kind of cool to go back 2 years ago and see that how far you've come, because it's so easy to forget sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, that we're growing and we're accomplishing goals left and right, baby, like we all are. So remember to celebrate your own little wins. But yeah, I think we could talk all day long about protecting your peace, but I think some of our biggest practices are definitely recognizing your triggers,
media consumption, and just managing it better.
Yeah. Removing yourself from toxic people.
Prioritizing yourself.
And
making changes.
Making changes where you can. I think those are all really good ways that you can practice today, starting today. You know, all the biggest changes in your life came from small moments, right? So I think start somewhere. Even if you could start on one of those ways towards protecting your peace, eventually you'll start to get towards all five of those. And then
by doing all of those practices, it'll make you feel like a better person. You'll be a better person. And I think that's what we all want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to be better people. We want to grow as better people. And we want to make sure that we're happy doing it and not doing it for other people, but for ourselves.
Yeah. Period.
Period. This is the point in our episode where we usually answer your questions that you all submitted. But since this is our last episode, we will be doing this a little differently and we will actually be asking you the questions. Mm-hmm. So, season one is wrapped up. Yeah. What do you want? What do you
want? She ignores me.
I know, I'm like.
Yes. What do you want to see? Season two. Let's get into it. Like, I want to know exactly what you want to learn in season two. Do you want to see guests? Do you have any ideas for guests that you want to see on here? Let us know. Like, we want this podcast to be something that you're a part of as well. So if you have some ideas and questions.
Maybe we will be sharing your stories. Maybe we'll answer some more questions. Yeah, let us know. We always are welcome to feedback.
Yeah, any feedback, let us know. This has definitely been an amazing experience so far, and I cannot wait to start season two with you all.
Thank you so much for tuning in this season. It was an incredible one for sure.
I can't believe we're already heading into season two. This is crazy. So don't forget to like, subscribe, and download if you enjoyed the podcast.
And then follow us on all platforms. Also, let us know what you want to listen to, what you want to see in season two. Maybe we'll have some guests. We'll talk about all the things, all the baggage that you want to hear.
All the baggage. So don't forget to follow us at On Airplane Mode with 2 underscores and at Kirsty and Christine. And that's where you'll find the link in the bio to submit all of your topics.